when they're going after libraries, when they're going after one of these last free resources that are available to everyone, regardless of, you know, how much money you have, where you live. I think it's something that should make you really nervous, because I think particularly with any sort of like fascist takeover we've seen in history, there is this immediate crackdown on information and who is able to access it. So I think it's something that we can look to history and both be scared, but also kind of give us some tools to resist it and show why this access to information is so important and critical right now.
In the spring of 2024, DePaul University and Gerber Hart announced they were jointly running an undergraduate class. Classes would be hosted at the Gerber Hart Library each week. The topic of the class? Banned books and the censorship of queer people historically and into today. At first glance, this felt mostly like a great partnership between the two institutions and an exciting way for college kids to get their hands dirty and really interact with gay history firsthand. Now, little more than a year later, the world, and especially libraries and higher ed environments, look really different. In hindsight, this class happening when it did feels like a precious moment, a little gift. When a university could be funded to bring a bunch of young people into a gay library and let them learn about how this country has historically silenced queer lives. Could this happen now, at least without enormous pushback? Feels unlikely.
You're listening to Unboxing Queer History, a podcast from Gerber Hart Library and Archives in Chicago. Gerber Hart is an independent, nonprofit library and archives with collections that focus on the LGBTQ+ history of Chicago and the Midwest. This season was made possible by a Broadening Narratives grant from the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, and by support from listeners like you. Thank you. In this episode, Anna is telling the story behind Gerber Hart's 2024 exhibit, Do Say Gay, Banned Books, and LGBTQ Freedoms, and the undergraduate class who created it. Do Say Gay was a class run through DePaul's Humanities X program. Founded in 2021, Humanities X brings DePaul faculty and Chicago community organizations together to create experiential humanities courses that are based on students completing a hands-on public project. It's worth noting that DePaul is a Catholic institution, part of the Vincentian tradition.
I'm Anna Mason. I'm a public library worker and also a public historian, something I've been able to partially do over the years at the Gerber Hart Library. Let's get into it. The course's mission? A group of 20 undergrads research, write, and build an exhibit using Gerber Hart records about the censorship of queer people and queer literature, all in just 10 weeks. Ambitious, to say the least. But before learning about what the Do Say Gay class's research was all about, I needed to get to know the people behind the exhibit. The class was co-taught by two professors.
My name is Barry Jean Borch. I'm a professor at DePaul, but I was one of the instructors for this class. At the time, I was the director of LGBTQ studies as well at DePaul.
That's how we met, because Barry was the LGBTQ studies director, which now I am. But anyway, so I'm Heather Montez Ireland. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Women's and Gender Studies at DePaul, and affiliated faculty with LGBTQ studies, and that's how I was lucky enough to start working with Barry.
Both professors, who mostly go by their first names, Barry and Heather, had done plenty of work on queer books, but never on book banning, and never for a student curation project like this.
There's a tremendous power in asking students to make things. What they, the energy and the excitement and the satisfaction that comes from making something, I think, can't be overrated. It's so powerful for them. And what they made was actually really, it was good. It was quality. It was, they were so proud of how it looked.
They also weren't alone. They had two undergrad fellows to assist with their 20 students.
Okay, I can go first. I'm Bella. I am one of two student fellows that helped kind of co-facilitate the Humanities X class, Do Say Gay, on banned books and LGBTQ rights.
Yeah, I'm Taylor. I was the other student fellow for the Do Say Gay class alongside Bella.
Some of the students came into the class with more background and personal connection than others. Identifying as gay or queer was certainly not a requirement for the course, but many of the students who enrolled certainly felt a personal stake in the issue of censorship and LGBTQ rights.
Okay, I'm Ori Duque. I'm a senior at DePaul University.
Ori is one of those students.
The idea that that's important is a present part of my life.
Being from Idaho, a state which has recently passed some of the strictest library censorship and anti-queer laws in the country, Ori definitely feels like this moment's attack on gay and trans people and intellectual freedom itself hits home for them. The students and professors showed me around the exhibit the final week it was still up at Gerber Hart. Though the exhibit was split into sections, all of them highlighted different aspects of the same theme: censorship of queer and trans people through time and medium. The professors told me that this is called epistemicide, the intentional destruction of knowledge systems. In this case, queer knowledge.
So if our histories don't exist, right, then in a way, like our present, you know, and our presence do not exist, right? It is a way of destroying or erasing us from social life.
And so then every generation feels alone. They feel like they don't have a place to come to or a place to join, right? If they don't know that there's a history there. And I think one of my favorite parts of the exhibition too, and there were so many things that I loved about it, but one of the things, the way we linked the library to this discussion wasn't just books. It was also this idea we had that we have always been banned, right? And that's why all of our things are here, right?
We have always been banned. This idea that although the current federal and state assault on free expression is upsetting, it also isn't new for queer people and for all marginalized people. Ori, Bella, and Taylor were able to walk me through the parts of the exhibit that meant the most to them. Ori's focus was the silence equals death portion of the exhibit.
So this is the silence equals death section, which the title implies is about AIDS history. And that was pretty much the only real limit on it. Everything else was basically what we wanted to do with AIDS history.
The silence equals death display was easily the largest part of the exhibit. It took up the entire back wall, all painted black, covered in 80s and 90s posters, and written all over with chalk.
We have these two body outlines that are on the wall and between the posters, with two questions above each. And the first one is, how does your rage motivate you? And the second one is, what did you learn about AIDS? And so I'm particularly partial to the second one. The first one is a very important question, and it's also something we wanted to be broader to someone's, you know, not just their knowledge about AIDS history, but it has been very fascinating to read the actual responses to when did you first learn about AIDS. And it's very varied. School in the 90s, Freddie Mercury, Grey's Anatomy, third grade, on my own, underlined. High school, we watched the movie Philadelphia, 1986, in sex class at San Francisco State. It's like everything you could possibly think of. Rent, you know. Rent is actually on there multiple times.
We had a middle school class that came in, and I was talking about the exhibit, and one of the students asked, what's AIDS? And so I explained, and then they wrote, here is where they learned about AIDS.
When did you learn about AIDS? Anecdotes like Jen's prove that Douce Gay was not just for its undergrads. I got to witness the tangible proof of that impact while I was there.
Yeah, so this was stationed at the end of the exhibit. So after people had kind of walked through, they were prompted to think about what were some things you were thinking and feeling while walking through the exhibit, and just kind of leave a comment or a reaction for the team of students and Taylor and I and the professors to kind of look back at, which we haven't done yet. So we're excited to kind of dig into that.
Let me grab Aaron, because I feel like Aaron might want to be here for this.
While we were waiting, I asked Bella to show me how they had decorated the feedback box, which was covered in magazine cutouts.
I just spent like an hour or two cutting out the gayest stuff I could find. So I have like Sophie on here, I have Muna, I have like just photos of like sapphic couples on the beach, or like, you know, the gay male cowboy aesthetic.
I've been watching as every now and then I peek my head in and I see just how the pile has grown. So I'm very excited to see what people have written.
Should I dive in?
Go for it.
Go.
Hopefully it's good.
Okay. All right, this one's a long one. It says, "Listen, I spent about an hour in here. It's a pretty quiet day at the archive, and I've been mostly alone. I cried a few times. It's overwhelming to see all at once how much and how little has changed. I can feel when reading the obituaries and pamphlets, zines, and queer publications, how hard queer people have been fighting way before I was born. To be here and queer in the present is both an honor and a responsibility. I'm so sad, so happy, and so grateful." That's a sweet one.
"I feel so grateful for this space, the thoughtful displays, and everyone who came together to make this magic. I feel the love of our transcestors and ancestors, as well as the love for the generations to come. And I feel gratitude for you, whoever you are, for reading my words."
This one says, "Excited and joyous to be queer and alive. Gay sex forever."
Yeah.
The exhibit encompasses what it means to be a gay or trans person right now. So much levity and joy alongside enormous grief. For many of the students, it was the first time they got to witness that and feel how that had been true long before their time, exactly what their professors had hoped for.
And they realize it's not just an idea, it's not just an assignment, it's not just a textbook, but like that people's actual lives were lived in this time with these obstacles. Right?
Do Say Gay would meet every Thursday at Gerberhardt. And students got to run wild in the archives, look into anything they wanted, and see what they connected to most.
Because we weren't just in the classroom, like, being lectured at or whatever, like, we were in the archives, like, physically moving around, like, looking at each other's things that we'd pulled from the archives, giving feedback to each other. Like, it was so, like, such a back-and-forth reciprocal relationship, and, like, I actually got to, like, you know, interact with every single student.
For many of them, this was their first time learning about queer history.
You have to remember that these were the students who, most of them were the ones who had graduated from high school online, because these were post-COVID students. These were students, many of whom came to their identities taking BuzzFeed quizzes in their parents' basement. And like, I can't tell you how many students literally told me that, right? They did not come out in communities the way we did.
For a lot of the students, the Do Say Gay classroom was their first queer community.
I was surprised how many students told us in various ways that they were seeking community. They wanted queer community in particular. And I appreciated them telling us that and being reminded how important that was, right? Is.
It was group work, but it was more than that. It was, like Bella said, it was like we were, like these people were a part of our community, and it was, it felt more like a community working together rather than we're just in this class and we just have to get through this project and then never talk again. So I feel like it was really special and really intentional in that way.
Each student found their own corner of history that they felt closest to. For Ori, that piece of history was the story of Roland Pena.
This part is the one that's my baby. So it started with, partway through the quarter, we had an assignment where we were doing this little pop-up exhibition at the DePaul School Library. And so things that had to do with things going on in the archives. And so I chose to focus mine on queer Latino poetry. And so Roland Pena, although he was no like public figure, famous writer, he was a poet. And so his poetry is in the collection of Gerberhardt. And so I came in one day outside of class to look for stuff for this project. And Jen pulled out his box for me. And because that project was about having things that we could like bring in or whatever, it wasn't actually terribly relevant to the output for the assignment, but I was so interested, I just sat there for I don't know how long that day and just read through, you know, the entire archival box. And then I went on with, you know, the class and my life and whatever.
Something like Roland's collection, you can only find at a community archive. It's a deeply personal set of letters. Letters that he had no way of knowing might end up being a part of a student research project one day.
So I was looking through Gay Chicago magazine, which was a Chicago area bar rag. I was hoping that looking through some stuff in like the early 90s, whatever, maybe there'd be pictures we could use, elements, things that could impact the exhibit. Then I started looking at them and I quickly became very obsessed with the obituary sections that they had as a piece of AIDS history in and of itself, because I think the first ones I was looking at were like 1992, and pretty much every single issue, issue after issue after issue, they're all these obituaries that the vast majority of them are AIDS deaths. And now I actually have, you know, data on that, which is interesting. But at the time I didn't, and so I just started taking pictures of them and documenting them. As I was getting further and thinking about how to incorporate it into the exhibit, I remembered in Roland Pena's box, there is this document that's up on the wall. And so it's placed right at the start of the Silence Equals Death space, right after our introduction text, which is an obituary that he wrote of himself or for himself that was enclosed in the will that he wrote about a year before he passed away.
It's important to know that even in these Gay Chicago magazines, many of the obituaries of people who died of HIV did not mention HIV/AIDS at all. Some of those who suffered from HIV, their loved ones, and many gay institutions were often still unwilling to name the disease publicly.
So I decided to put them together. So what we have now is the actual obituary that he wrote, then a typed up and printed version of the one that was published in Gay Chicago magazine.
With these two documents side by side, you can see the differences in how Gay Chicago wrote Roland's obit and how he wrote his own. You can see the places where Roland scratched words and phrases out, handwrote his own ideas in, and made this obituary exactly the way he wanted it. That in no uncertain terms, his death was the result of AIDS. Ori was the first person at Gerberhart to really spend time with Roland Pena's letters and see that this obituary he wrote of himself, an immensely important piece of gay history, was different than the obituary published for the public. This makes me think of a core principle of librarianship that goes, every reader their book and every book their reader. What if it was every person their archive collection, every archive collection, its person? Ori was not the only student to find a special connection to someone's story in Gerberhart's archives, and that's why the class thrived like it did. But the class and its coursework didn't happen in a vacuum. When Barry and Heather conceived of the class, the water that everyone, and especially queer scholars, were swimming in was the return to a structural assault on gay and trans people. And even though spring of 2024 now feels like a really long time ago, the professors and the DePaul administration were worried about the optics of the class.
There was a lot of people that were worried that there was going to be a lot of pushback, right? So we were definitely navigating the potential pushback. We talked with the librarians about, you know, the Gerberhart librarians about what could happen. And we also talked with students as we went through, like, remember, you know, the work you're making is public. So everything, every decision you're making, like, have a sense of why, you know, you're making that decision and put deliberate, you know, intention and thought into it. And if we do that, I think we'll produce something great.
Because who better than academics of queerness to know these fears and pressures all too well? Heather, who is a professor of women's and gender studies, doesn't find this new in the least.
Coming from my field, my background, and I'm talking to people about this a lot, is that I come from a field that's, and fields that are always under attack, that have been under attack. So, you know, my training, right, is in gender studies, women's studies, sexuality, and ethnic studies. That, the moment we're in right now is in some ways part of the unfortunate and terrible and rather logical conclusion of where these attacks have brought us, right? That they were attacking ethnic studies in the 2010s. And then when that wasn't working so great, they started calling it CRT. And then there, you know, the right is trying to brand CRT as this horrible thing. And then the next thing and the next thing, and then it's gender theory. And then it's, right. So I've lived through and seen multiple manifestations of that. And so when you are, right, realizing that your existence is never guaranteed, right, I think that is always in the back of your mind.
Even though the course itself was not shut down, the students were affected by institutional censorship in other ways. In that same semester Douce Gay was going on, DePaul students were part of the nationwide movement to occupy their campus to protest Israel's assault on Gaza.
When you have freedom of speech actively being targeted on your own campus while you're working on an exhibit that's about censorship, that's, you know, it feels especially relevant. Let's just say that.
They even had class at Gerber Hart the morning that the university and Chicago police tore down the encampments.
And a lot of students didn't show up, which is like totally cool. I almost didn't show up, but kind of felt called to show up because I knew that I would find support and community in this space and that would ultimately be good for me.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. Anti-war campus protests get shut down, and the political powers that be attempt to silence marginalized people resisting. Just like what Heather said, the targets and language may change, but what must stay the same is the determination to push back.
And I think about this every time I walk through the space, is that this is the evidence of our survival. It's evidence of our survival before, all the times when things were terrible, different kinds of terrible. I mean, they keep coming up with new terribles, but we have survived through all of this, and this is the evidence. And I mean, that makes a difference in students' lives to know that. And we survive by creating things. We survive by making worlds for ourselves. We always have. We always will.
And finally, after a semester of hard work, the students ended with a night in which the public got to come see their completed exhibit. The room was packed. Many students brought their loved ones. There was a drag king story hour reading of banned books. And one student even baked a cake decorated as one of the year's most challenged books, Genderqueer by Maya Kobabe.
Our joy and the students' joy in creating this was met by the joy of the people who came to the opening, at least. And that was something you can't plan for, but that was absolutely what happened. And it's part of the reason it was such a powerful night.
It was a celebration of queer resistance and anti-censorship.
A number of them said to me afterward, okay, were you afraid we weren't going to pull it off? And I said, no, I wasn't, because I know what that moment is when you're putting on a show. That moment is before, when it's like, oh my God, this is a disaster. And then you turn the corner and it all comes together when the lights go on, right? You know, and that's what this was. And they did pull it together. And, you know, a lot of them had not had that experience before.
The night was a complete success and a proud moment for everyone involved. The future of educational opportunities like this is not only about determination and resistance. Barry also made the point that universities offering classes like Douce Gay is also just as much about meeting a demand.
Students want these classes, you know. Our class filled in a day, right? You know, and that will just increase. Right, you know, thinking about is when I'm back in the classroom next year, you know, is anyone going to tell me I shouldn't call my class Queer Memoir? You know, I'll be like, why would you do that when it would half enrollment to take that off? And go ahead, let's bring it, because, you know, the students are here to do this.
And as a student of censorship and intellectual freedom myself, I agree with Barry. The best way to get people to demand a book, a course, a topic? Ban it. It just makes people want it more. For some, Douce Gay was their last hurrah with DePaul. Bella graduated at the end of that spring and is now coaching for the Chicago Fire youth soccer team and building their new post-grad queer life. For others, Dulce Gay was just the beginning of their relationship to Gerber Hart and to research.
I mean, it's changed a lot about my life, because since the exhibit opened, I've been coming in and working on building this obituary database for Gay Chicago Magazine obituaries, though ideally other ones also after that.
Ori is building a database of obituaries that they hope will one day be an open online source for all. Clearly, an exhibit was just the beginning of what these students could accomplish. Taylor thinks that what's possible is always about what's needed.
In the face of whatever is going on, I think the community will always respond to what's needed, and I think we'll always be able to get what we need. And so I think the reason that this happened now was because we all needed it now.
So to the question of if this class could happen now, maybe not. It also couldn't have happened plenty of times previous to 2024, and will be able to happen in many moments in an unknown future. Time is not linear. What we can do is preserve the record of successes like the Dulce Gay class so that the queer studies classrooms and researchers to come may add to that history. Thank you to Heather Montes Ireland, Barry Borich, Ori Duque, Bella Netti, and Taylor Sellers Valera for speaking to me for this story.
This episode was produced by Anna Mason and edited by Bill Healy. Unboxing Queer History Season 2 is co-created by Aaron Bell and Jen Dentil. Special thanks to the Gaylord and Dorothy Dolly Foundation for providing major funding for this season and for the support of listeners like you. To learn more about how you can support the preservation of our collections and help us continue Unboxing Queer History, visit gerberhart.org.